is said, in Nita 31a, that there are three partners in the creation of a human being: God, the Mother, and the Father. But nowadays, it seems like there are so many more people involved. Aside from the doctors, nurses, doulas, and maternity coaches who are there to help the couple throughout every step of the pregnancy, there are now geneticists involved, people who scrutinize the DNA of the fertilized zygote on a microscopic level to ensure that there are no molecular abnormalities which can cause the child to have some sort of fatal disease. Now, in order to understand what we are going to be talking about, you need to know some basic concepts. DNA can be found in the nucleus of the cell, packaged up tightly into structures called chromosomes. Chromosomes are long thread-like structures made of a DNA molecule and protein. During cell division, chromosomes coil up tightly into X shapes and are more easily visible under a microscope. Human cells have 23 pairs of chromosomes. DNA, which stands for deoxyribose nucleic acid, is made up of billions of building blocks called nucleotides. The specific order of nucleotides, which make up a gene, will basically code for different proteins. These proteins control everything in the cell. In this way, DNA is like the boss of a company. It gives instructions, but doesn't do very much of the actual work. These proteins help each cell do its job. The genes will govern different traits. Some you can see, called phenotype, like your hair or eye color, and some that you can't, called genotype, which you carry on and pass to your kids. So since the mid-1800s, when Mendel started to experiment with his pea plants and discover the importance of genes in determining phenotypic expression, remember, what you can see, there have been more scientific advancements which have helped clarify and determine the structure of DNA and the process of protein synthesis, which, remember, are used to control everything in the cell. Once scientists discovered how to amplify DNA, it became easier for them to identify which genotypic mutation were responsible for different diseases. The first genetic disease to ever be mapped was Huntington's disease in 1983, and from that point on, more and more diseases were being mapped. At this point, the scientific world began an international effort to determine the human genome, which consists of over 100,000 genes and 3 billion plus nucleotide bases. The Human Genome Project, which started in 1990 and was completed in 2003, suddenly opened the doors to ethical, logical, social, and most importantly, halakhic issues. For instance, if we know from genetic investigation that a child will be born with some genetic defect, are we allowed to manipulate the affected gene so that the child can live a normal life? Who is the one to actually decide which traits are considered normal and which constitute a disability or a disorder? Will the high costs of gene therapy make it available only to the wealthy? Moreover, will the less fortunate be obligated to somehow get treatment for their child if it means saving a kid's life? And should people be allowed to use gene therapy to enhance basic human traits, such as height, intelligence, or something like athletic ability? The main question is, if we have the ability to enhance a person's life, should we? In Bereshis Perek Aleph Pasuk Chaf Ches, Hashem says, "You should fill the earth and subdue it." According to Rav Hirsch, to subdue it means to master and transform the earth and its products for human purposes. Therefore, whatever is good for mankind must be permissible and praiseworthy. Accordingly, therapeutic genetic engineering and gene therapy that may result from the knowledge derived from the genome project is not a Torah violation of undermining Hashem's creation of the world by manipulating nature. Actually, it seems like it's a confirmation of the creation of the world. As a result, the use of genetic knowledge to benefit mankind becomes biblically mandated. Using knowledge to heal illness and cure disease is also allowed based on the Talmudic interpretations in Bava Kamma of the phrase in "heal he shall heal," which we see in Shemos, or even biblically mandated based on Rambam's interpretation in the Dvarim of the biblical obligation to restore a lost object, to include the restoration of one's health. If we can use genetically engineered medications like insulin and various antibiotics, then it would seem that it would be halakhically permissible to cure disease by gene therapy. Rabbi Dr. Abraham, who is the author of Nishmas Avraham, thought that genetic manipulation should be allowed because halakha is not concerned with anything that isn't visible to the naked eye, like chromosomes. However, Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Auerbach thought that this reasoning was incorrect because both the medium carrying the genetic material and, importantly, the effects of genetic changes are very much visible to the naked eye. Still, Rabbi Auerbach allows gene therapy because he says that it's no different than doing surgery. Just like you can take out a piece of someone in order to fix a disease, you should also be able to manipulate genes that will prevent the disease in the first place. It is important to note that this permissibility only extends to healing genetic diseases, not changing eye color or any other non-life-threatening trait. Current gene therapy research has focused on treating individuals by targeting the therapy to body cells, such as bone marrow or blood cells. This type of gene therapy cannot be passed on to a person's children. Gene therapy could be targeted to egg and sperm cells, called germ cells, however, which would allow the inserted gene to be passed on to future generations. This approach is known as germline gene therapy. The idea of germline gene therapy is actually really controversial. While it could spare future generations in a family from having a particular genetic disorder, it might affect the development of a fetus in unexpected ways or have long-term side effects that are not yet known. Because people who would be affected by germline gene therapy are not yet born, they can't choose whether or not to have the treatment. And as a result, the U.S. government actually doesn't use federal funds to research germline genetic therapy in people. At the end of the day, there is still a lot of uncertainty surrounding gene therapy. However, we can be comforted in the fact that as long as we place halakha and ethics at the forefront of scientific endeavors, we will be able to significantly improve human life without the risk of abusing scientific knowledge. Thank you.